As one of the original dumbass partners, Perry Martin has been there from the beginning with California Chrome, and he will be there at the end. Now part of the ownership team with TaylorMade, Martin will bid adieu to one of the best and most charismatic horses of our times when California Chrome says goodbye in the January 28th Pegasus World Cup at Gulfstream Park. This is Bill Finley, and Perry Martin is our guest on this week's Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, which will begin after this message from our sponsor, TaylorMade.
TaylorMade, the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing, has teamed up with the Tony Leonard Collection. Now, horse enthusiasts from around the world can browse and purchase select photos from the lifelong collection of renowned equine photographer, the late great Tony Leonard. For unique gifts and never-before-seen historical photos of racing's all-time greats, visit thetonyleonardcollection.com.
It's one of the most remarkable stories in racing history. Two racing neophytes, one named Perry Martin and one named Steve Coburn, purchase a mare whose best day came when she won an $8,000 maiden claimer at Golden Gate Fields, bred her to a somewhat unfashionable stallion in Lucky Pulpit, and the end result was California Chrome, the richest racehorse of all time, with $14.5 million in earnings. Were they incredibly lucky, incredibly smart, or a little bit of both? Let's find out what Perry Martin thinks about that, our guest on this week's TDN podcast. Welcome, Perry. And the story begins as part of the Blinkers On Racing Syndicate. Perry Martin and Steve Coburn own 5% of all the Blinkers On horses, including an undistinguished mare named Love That Chase.
The leader at the eighth pole is Love That Chase. On the outside, Fool Me Once is two lengths away, drifting about and throwing away any chance she might have had. She's racing erratically in second, and Love the Chase comes home a strong winner. Love the Chase from Fool Me Once, Rasalka, My Buddy Holly fourth, Fifth Eye the Fly, and Kim Or.
And that you just heard was the lone victory of that mayor's career, winning the $8,000 maiden claimer. Perry Martin has been quoted as saying, "I got very interested in the worst performing racehorse in the barn," meaning that mare, the dam of California Chrome, and all the Blinkers On horses. And Perry, can you elaborate on that? What was your interest in this maiden-claiming filly that really nobody else saw any benefit to other than her modest career on the racetrack?
Well, good morning. That takes me back now. that race was a good day. But, at the time, Denise and I owned 5% of all the Blinkers On offerings for that year. And there were some stakes winning fillies in there as well. But at the time, California Thoroughbred Breeders Association was just... was making strides developing the Calbred program. They were offering larger purses, you know, for restricted races for Calbreds. They had a list of Calbred-only stakes races. And so Denise and I were thinking of progressing. We had spent several years with Blinkers On, starting with just 5% of one horse, and then eventually buying 5% of all the offerings, and we were thinking about going out on our own, and we really wanted to get into the breeding program. And, you know, we took our time doing it. I studied the, what do great breeders, there's only so many great, great breeders out there, you know, what did they do to develop their breeding programs. And I started studying people and reading different articles on breeding theories and came across one of my favorites. It was Edward Stanley, the 17th Earl of Derby. It was a long time ago, but it was back in a time where there was a lot of patience in breeding programs. They would breed horses to other horses, never race the horses. They were developing the breeding lines, and they would just breed horses to develop the breeding lines to finally get to the point where they breed the horses where they want to race. And that's a long-term, decades process. And I just found it fascinating that, you know, the study that these people put into it, and I looked at what they had done and decided that if we were going to have any chance in this industry, we'd have to do something along those lines. But we don't have the time or the resources to do all that development work. And so we'll have to find something out there that people had done for us and then purchase into that. And to my surprise, because when we were purchasing the breeders on horses, it was just simply because we were having success in that program. They're using their philosophies in buying and developing racehorses. We were learning from that. But when we started applying these different breeding models, you know, the first place you look is, well, let's see what our horses have. And we found Love the Chase, who really wasn't performing well on the track. That wasn't a concern to me, simply because of what I learned, researching these different breeding programs. One of Love the Chase's ancestors is La Traine. Really did not have a very good racing career. I think she made $137 on the racetrack, but she was purchased from over in Europe and brought to the United States and kicked off a breeding line which is just phenomenal. But she had a very good pedigree, a poor racing career, but made for a very good broodmare. Love the Chase was exactly the same, and just sort of fell into our lap. And we made the decision, just because we're able to pick her up at a very, very good price. I noticed in all the articles, they're still referring to her as the $8,000 mare. Well, she's now the $1.95 million mare because that's her last sales price. So unless you're going to refer to me as a $1.65 an hour store clerk back from my first job when I was 16 years old, they don't do that anymore. But they're still referring to her as an $8,000 purchase. So I don't know.
Well, we'll get to that a little later. One of the greatest return on investments in racing history or any sort of business history, how you turned an $8,000 investment into something that you eventually sold for that $1.95 million. And Perry, as you well know, and our listeners will know, the dumbass thing is not a slight. It's actually what you guys called your stable. And the legend has it is that when you paid this paltry sum of $8,000, some people thought you guys were a bunch of rubes, and that, as you have said, that people called you a bunch of dumbasses. Thus, you named your stable Dumbass Partners. But I've never really heard you elaborate on that story. And now you obviously look back on it and chuckle. But you know who, when, where, and you know, did somebody really call you a dumbass?
Yeah, when Blinkers On decided to divest the partnership in Love the Chase, Chrome's Dam, they went out to the different owners and said that they were going to do this, and I called in to Blinkers On and said, well, I was interested in purchasing her, and Steve Coburn was also a 5% owner. He called in and said he was interested in purchasing her. So they gave us both each other's phone numbers so we could contact each other, and we decided to get together out at Golden Gate Fields, where she was stabled, and we met out there for the first time, and we were looking at the mare, talking about going partners on Love the Chase, and a groom happened to come by and asked us if you guys interested in purchasing this mare, because he had heard us talking about it, and we said yeah. He goes, anybody that purchases this filly is a dumbass. And so I looked over at Steve and put out my hand and to shake hands and said, okay, then, dumbass partners. And off, you know, we were off and running. We just took it from there. We went and had coffee with the wives, and we got Carolyn's favorite color was purple, and Denise's favorite color was green. And we said, well, the silks will be purple and green, and we'll put an ass on the back, a caricature of a donkey, and we'll put DAP for dumbass partners on the front, because I don't think they'll let us spell it out on the silks.
Right, right.
And that was it.
Now
we were off and running.
Now, obviously, the name, the whole dumbass partners, is tongue in cheek. But as you well know, you know, you two were cast as kind of guys who didn't know what you were doing, fumbled around in the dark, and got just incredibly lucky. And, you know, did you sense that that's what people thought of you? And if so, did it bother you that perhaps you were not being given credit for, you know, again, what turned out to be a brilliant decision?
Well, you have to understand the media, and the media sells what sells. And so that was a story that was developed for the build-up for the Triple Crown, which is the big series of races that Americans actually pay attention to. So here was a story they built up about two guys, neophytes that don't know anything, and went out and just through serendipity bred a horse that is a contender for the Kentucky Derby. It's a wonderful feel-good story that people bought into, and I was just sort of there along for the ride. It's something you need to experience. You can't fight that wave of, people are telling you this is what it is, and that's it. And, you know, you could be a real jerk, I guess, and just tell everybody, oh, you're, I don't know, what are you going to do, call them liars or whatever else. But I think there's a lot more that went into it than the story that was promoted. But it's a nice story.
Okay. So let's go back to my original question that I brought up when I introduced this segment. Were you incredibly smart? Were you incredibly lucky? Were you a little bit of both?
Well, I'm not a big believer in luck. Luck is being able to position yourself so that good things happen. And I don't consider myself smart because, well, I don't know. Maybe it is smart because all I was doing was following a path that was laid out for me by people I consider experts. This is what you need to do to be successful in horse breeding. I studied that, I adopted that, and followed through. And if there's luck involved, it's that the first horse I ever bred won the Kentucky Derby. I don't know how many people can say that. Probably not even the people that I stole all the ideas from in down through history. So, the fact that we were able to do it really never surprised me. That was sort of by design. That's what we were trying to do. So I wasn't surprised we accomplished what we tried to do. It's a little surprising we did it on the first try.
Right. Right. Anybody listening to this has probably already figured out that Perry Martin is the type of individual who doesn't do things just willy-nilly. And matter of fact, this leads into, Perry, your off-the-track business, and a fascinating business. You were the operator of Martin Testing Laboratories. If you look that up, it says that you are an expert in the field of failure analysis. So you're an analyst already in your business, but tell us more about what really failure analysis is, and is there any connection between that sort of thinking, your business, and how you've approached your horse racing endeavors?
Well, yeah. What I've learned, basically, I'm a scientist, and a lot of people think that's impressive, but a scientist is just an observer. You study things, you observe things, you document things, and you draw conclusions from that. And failure analysis is used. My background, I came from the Air Force. And in the Air Force, you know, we have these very complicated machines that fly at supersonic speeds. And if things go wrong, things go bad. And so there's an intensive effort to study and figure out what could go wrong or what does. And you do that by finding out what does go wrong, analyzing why it happens and correcting that, and building into the model of, a reliability model for a better airplane, or a better system. And there's a lot of factors that go into when you do crash investigation. There's a lot of factors that go into that. You know, you have to question, is it the design? Is it the maintenance that we're using? Was it the pilot error, human error? The same sort of things go into horses. If you look back at a lot of the famous horses, Seabiscuit is a great example. Everybody knows the story of Seabiscuit. When Seabiscuit was born, he came out and had a very good pedigree, was given to a top trainer, Mr. Fitzsimmons, and didn't really run to his potential. And then when he changed connections and changed trainers, those people were able to get more out of him, and he became a great horse. It's not that he wasn't always a great horse. It takes a lot of things to build a great racehorse, just like it takes a lot of different things to build a great jet plane. So, there's a lot of similarity, and I just do what I know how to do. As I look at things, I look at the industry, I look at the different models that people are using in their breeding programs, and I try and take from the best and get rid of the stuff that's going to have negative influence and just try and optimize everything. It's a constant learning process, and if you look at Chrome's career, you'll see here's a horse that didn't win his first race. Came in second. He was it was sort of luck of the draw. If you think back, it was, the 2-year-olds, they start short races. I think his first race was 4.5 furlongs, and we happened to draw the outside post. At 4.5 furlongs, you're very close to the first turn, and so he got held very wide on the first turn, being on the outside. Ran further than all the other horses, and then he kicked in the stretch and was able to get up in the second. But, we didn't scratch when we drew the outside. We just said, my goal is not to have an undefeated racehorse. It's to get him started, to get him, losing a lot of times, having a negative occurrence, just like with failure analysis, you're able to learn from that, the horse learned from that, and then in his next out, he was able to win. So the racing industry and my background, I've found a way to meld them together and try and make a positive effect from that.
Well, Perry Martin has already touched on the beginnings of California Chrome's racing career, a very interesting part of the story. We're going to take a further look at that after this message from our friends at TaylorMade.
Family owned and operated since 1976, TaylorMade has dedicated the past three decades to serving clients and helping make equine dreams come true. No other agency has sold more Grade 1 winners, more graded stakes winners, or more Breeders' Cup champions than TaylorMade. Visit us at the sales or online at TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what TaylorMade can do for you.
After breaking his maiden in his second career start, which Perry Martin just discussed, California Chrome went on to win three California bred stakes races. But that wasn't enough for anyone to consider him a top Kentucky Derby prospect. That all changed on March 8th, 2014 at Santa Anita.
They've run past the 3/8 pole, and it's still California Chrome and Midnight Hawk stride for stride. It's four lengths back to School of Hard Rocks and then Christo. They're at the top of the lane, and California Chrome now kicks for home, and California Chrome opens up to lead by 2.5. Midnight Hawk battling in second, but it's all California Chrome as they come for home. They would need to sprout wings to get to California Chrome. Absolutely romping in under Victor Espinosa. San Felipe was a walkover for California Chrome.
Against open company, California Chrome, as Trevor Denman said, romped in the Grade 2 San Felipe, winning by 7.25 lengths. A month later, he was an easy winner of the Santa Anita Derby. And Perry, at this point, you know what you have. You have a budding star on your hands. And you've expressed that you've been confident in this horse all along, confident in the breeding, confident in everything you've already done. But I think it's fair to ask, at this point, even before the Kentucky Derby, you're a Grade 1 winner in the Santa Anita Derby. Has this gone beyond your wildest expectations?
Let me answer it this way. Back in January, my daughter was going to a bachelorette party in Las Vegas. And I gave her $500 to bet on California Chrome in the Kentucky Derby futures. So, and she was, it's kind of funny. It's a funny story because, she's got this sweet baby face, and she would go up to the different sports books and she'd go, "I want to bet $100 on California Chrome to win the Kentucky Derby." And these guys would go, "Who? He's not even on our list." So they would put him on the list, and she'd bet $100 at 300-1. And they're going, "Are you sure you want to do this? Do you know what you're doing?" And he'd go, "Oh yeah, I want to do this. My dad told me to do it." So then she goes, "Can I bet another $100?" And they go, "Well, yeah, but we can only give you 250-1.
Okay.
Okay, and then she did that, and then when I told her, when it gets below 200-1, then you got to go to a different sports book and start all over again. But she laid off all the money for me, and that, again, I had a lot of confidence in the horse, and those futures bets actually brought me into positive territory from my betting career. So I don't really bet too much at the track anymore. I figured as long as I'm ahead, I'm just going to try and stay there.
Well, ahead for the life at the Mutual Windows, we're certainly going to put that among your greatest accomplishments. But the California Chrome story was just beginning, and it would only get better.
Coming to the top of the stretch, and California Chrome makes his move for the lead. It is California Chrome on the outside. Samrat runs at him with the gate pole. California Chrome is pulling away. California Chrome into the final furlong. He's got a 5-length lead on his competition. It is California Chrome in front. And from the back of the pack on the outside, Commanding Curve is taken second. But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby.
The Kentucky Derby, of course, is where horses become legends. And it was at Churchill Downs where Chrome proved once and for all that he was something special, winning the most famous race on the planet with authority. Perry, this is the most obvious and simple question, but it needs to be asked. What are those emotions like? What was going through your mind as you saw that beautiful chestnut horse cross the finish line in front at Churchill Downs that day?
Yeah, it's... it's hard for me to talk about because there was a lot going on in our lives at that point. I mean, we went to the Derby. It was supposed to be all about the horse, but, it turned out to be, it was really all about my mom at that point because she was dying and she checked herself out of the hospital to go see him win, and he did that for her, and I'm just so grateful. It's still hard for me to talk about.
Well, it's a very touching story, and again, something that just makes everything that's happened so much more special. A California Chrome, of course, would go on to win the Preakness, but the Triple Crown dream would not be one that ended happily. Perry, it's a case of stating the obvious, but that had to be a bitter day for you. And did you ever think that he would lose? And what did it feel like to see that dream end with a non-winning performance?
Well, you can call me a neophyte, but I don't expect my horse to win every race. At the level of competition, we've always asked a lot of Chrome. We put him in the highest caliber, the highest level races in the world. And at that level, you're really deluding yourself if you think you're going to win every race. Horses are not machines. Chrome has a heart of gold, the heart of a champion. Watching that race was hard for me because I didn't really see what happened at the start, but I could see throughout the race he was tossing his head and holding his head up higher than he normally does. And I knew something was wrong. I just didn't know what. But it came out later. He was stepped on at the start and tore part of his hoof off the back of his front foot. So the Triple Crown was never my dream. So it wasn't that rough on me. It was another race. I would love to win them all, but that's asking a lot.
Understood. Well, the rest of 2014 would be relatively quiet for California Chrome as he would win just one more race after the Belmont, that being the Hollywood Derby on the grass in November at Del Mar. In 2015, he started just twice and failed to win, though he was second in the Dubai World Cup. He was sent to England for a start at Royal Ascot, but that didn't work out as he was subsequently injured and did not race again that year. And Perry, looking back on what is kind of now regarded as this lost year of 2015, were there any mistakes made? Is there any decisions that were made that you regret? Is there anything that if you had to do it all over again, you would have done differently that year?
Well, we now know that Chrome had bone bruising. At the time, I didn't know what bone bruising was. And if just going by the name, you would think that bone bruising is something caused by trauma, because we all know bruises are caused by trauma. But bone bruising is actually a lack of density or a loss of density in the cannon bones due to inactivity. It's not from the pounding on the track. It's from the standing in the stall 23 hours a day. So, again, as I said, this is a learning experience. You have to learn, you're not born knowing everything there is to know about every individual horse. The horse has to tell you things, and you have to be observant because he won't explain it like Mr. Ed. Wilbur, my cannonball. it just doesn't go that way. You have to observe, and you have to depend a lot on the medical expertise. We were given no indication while he was racing that this was an issue. It's not an injury. It's actually a condition. Probably for his loss in the San Antonio, it was a contributing factor. Going to Dubai, I don't believe going to Dubai was a mistake. I believe we should have probably skipped on the San Antonio and went to Dubai early to get him a race over there. I think he would have done better. The activity in Dubai actually is much different than the activity in the training activity in the United States. In the States, the horses get up in the morning, they go out and they do their work, and then it's they get walked out, cooled out, washed, and fed, and they're back in the stall for 23 hours. It's that inactivity which causes the bone bruising. In Dubai, that was probably the start of his recovery.
Mm.
The quarantine barn that we were forced to race out of is a 45-minute walk in the morning to the track for training. So his routine was forced to change over in Dubai. He had a morning, get up, and we would walk him at the barn, and then he'd have a 45-minute walk to the track, and then he'd work to the track, and then he'd have a 45-minute walk back to the barn. Since we had a barn to our, pretty much we were the star of the show, and they gave us a barn to ourselves, and he had a little grassy area that we would walk him in, and he could pick grass. We had a sand pit that he could roll and play in and be a horse. His activity was a lot different, and I think that was the start of his recovery. Going to England was, I don't know, everybody says it was a big surprise. I'm not sure how. The people from Ascot were taking Art out to lunch and breakfast on a routine basis, talking to him about going to England. They were talking to me about going to England. I stated that we're not going to make a decision about going to England until after the World Cup. We're going to remain focused on that, and we'll make a decision after that race. If he comes out of the race fine, then we'll probably do it. And that's what we did. I don't regret going to England. I think it was a beneficial to the horse. It was a shorter flight, so it was less stress on him going to England rather than coming back to the States. Again, the routine in England, he was given some time to recover. England is the first place. He actually had a triple wide stall in England. They took the shutters out from two stalls, and he had a triple wide stall, and he had a heat lamp on the far end. And in the morning, on the chilly English mornings when the cold fog is rolled in, you'd find Chrome. He'd be laying under the heat lamp, warming himself, and then he'd walk over. He had a lot of room to walk around. He'd do laps in his stall, and he'd go over and eat, and then he'd come back and he'd get under the heat lamp. But in England, it was a wonderful experience for Chrome. Again, his routine was changed. He wasn't kept at the track. The horses in England are trained from the yards of the trainers. In Newmarket, it's beautiful. Again, it was a 45-minute walk for him in the mornings out to the gallops, and then he would do his work out on the gallops. It's just a fantastic facility they have there. I was able to go out and walk the gallops with Ray Guest. He explained to me the different, you could see where they actually had the different gallops were different tracks of turf, different types of turf with different depths and footings, with the idea that they were duplicating famous racetracks around Europe. And if you wanted to train for the Arc de Triomphe, you could go over to one gallop. If you want to train for Ascot, you go over to another gallop, and all the different tracks were simulated with their, how deep they are and everything, and the different types of grass that they have, and it was fantastic. So Chrome was out on the gallops training, and then he'd have 45 minutes to walk back, He had his triple wide stall in the yard. He had his own little private paddock where he could go out and pick grass and walk and graze like horses are supposed to. So I think that was the place where it started to mitigate the bone bruising. It was unfortunate that he did get a bruised hoof and an abscess in his hoof, and that caused us to cancel out from the Ascot. And then when we came back, I guess I haven't mentioned that Chrome was trained in the English manner, which is they keep the horses a lot lighter in England, and there's a reason for that. In England, the trainers aren't allowed to use race day medication mm-hmm. like Lasix. In the States, trainers like to have, they feel their horse is healthy if he's dappled, which means that there's a thin layer of fat between the skin and the bones, or the muscle. But the American trainers use Lasix the day of the race to dehydrate horses. They urinate out the excess water they have in their systems. That makes them 60 to 80 pounds lighter for the race. In England, they don't have that capability. They've taken race day Lasix away, so they keep the horses lighter. Their metabolisms are much higher, similar to human athletes, bodybuilders, where bodybuilders will take in 6,000-8,000 calories a day, but they're all sinew, muscly. That's because they've increased their metabolism to great rate, mm-hmm. to a higher rate just through training. That's the same type of training that was done on Chrome in England, and so he was about 80 to 100 pounds lighter, and that was by design. But when he came back, we had an issue. When he was transported back to Arlington, he was becoming dehydrated on the flight. He was never in danger. I got 5 calls from the physician, the veterinarian that was on the flight with him. He kept me informed that he was, pushing IV fluids. The horse was agitated, and so he was tranquilized. And when he got off the flight, he looked just like you or I would if we had been on a special regimen and then lost 50 pounds mm-hmm. during the flight due to dehydration and were given tranquilizers. If we got off the flight, we wouldn't look very good either. So a lot was made of that. I think it's just because of people don't understand the actual situation of what was occurring. I've got pictures of Chrome in England. I mean, he looks, again, like a bodybuilder. He's all muscle and sinew, and there's nothing about him that looks like he was denied nourishment. I mean, he looked just fantastic. But so luckily, when he did get back and we off the plane. He was being vetted at that time for a sale to TaylorMade, and they discovered the bone bruising issue. And so at that point, we made the, really the only decision we could, which is do what's best for the horse. We were offered the option because it was bone bruising has different magnitudes, and this was the very lightest of possibilities of cases, and there are cases of horses racing with that condition. But we decided to not take any chances and to rest them. Mm-hmm. That's what we did. And so 2015 was pretty much over. We decided to give him the time that he needed, and then we were going to either breed him in 2016 or race him, depending on the outcome. And Chrome showed us that he was ready to go for for racing again, so we made the decision to target the big races and go for a 2016 campaign.
Well, as we mentioned, 2015 was not a great year for California Chrome, but he has come roaring back in 2016. And after this message from TaylorMade, we'll look at what has been a magical year for California Chrome.
Family owned and operated since 1976, TaylorMade has dedicated the past three decades to serving clients and helping make equine dreams come true. No other agency has sold more Grade 1 winners, more graded stakes winners, or more Breeders' Cup champions than TaylorMade. Visit us at the sales or online at TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what TaylorMade can do for you.
After a win in the San Pasqual, Chrome went to Dubai, won a prep for the Dubai World Cup there, and then with $10 million on the line, here's what happened.
California Chrome out wide and loomed up. Mashore Wish in the center. Bob DeHidge on the rail. They get away from Special Fighter. But California Chrome has gone into overdrive. He's two lengths in front. He's clear of Bob DeHidge battling on. Then Mashore Wish, but it's California Chrome in front. It's Alchemy in Dubai. Chrome turns to gold. California Chrome wins the Dubai World Cup from Bob DeHidge.
Chrome turned to gold, then he came back to the States, won the San Diego Handicap, the Pacific Classic, and the Awesome again. But what would follow was the same thing that happened in 2014. In the Breeders' Cup Classic, California Chrome would be denied.
And they're into the stretch, and California Chrome comes roaring home with Arrowgate coming after him on the outside. A furlong to run. California Chrome put to the test. Still coming! California Chrome! Arrowgate steals the show in the Breeders' Cup Classic! He has defeated California Chrome under Mike Smith in his 25th Breeders' Cup score!
Perry, when we discussed the 2014 Belmont, you already said that you understand the game well enough to know that even a horse as great as California Chrome is not going to win every time. But I think that race took a lot of people by surprise because Chrome was not only the favorite, but he was looked upon as, at that point, as almost invincible, even with a promising three-year-old in Arrowgate in the field. So just as I asked you about the Belmont, what was your reaction to the loss in the Breeders' Cup Classic? Was it shock, dismay, or just these things happen?
Well, I hated it.
Okay.
I hate losing. the expectations, I think, were real because I still believe he's the best horse in the world. But again, things can go wrong, and horses are not machines, and that just wasn't our day. I mean, that's all I really want to say about that. I understand those kind of things happen, and you know, we'll pick it up, we'll learn from it, and we'll go to the next one.
Well, the good news is, in a typical year, the story would have ended there. But then the Stornet Group comes up with this wonderful concept called the Pegasus World Cup. It keeps California Chrome in training for a few extra months before he goes off to stud. And it also gets Arrowgate to also come out of mothballs and to point for this race at Gulfstream. So, Perry, first of all, it's going to be, if everybody stays healthy and both horses run, including also the other 10 others, let's not forget about the other horses in the field. This is going to be one of the great events in the history of racing. Now, $12 million in purse money speaks for itself, but what is most important to you in the Pegasus? Is it redemption? Is it a chance for a rematch with Arrowgate and proving something? When you go to the races that morning, I'm sure your heart's going to be beating, but what really will be most in your forefront of your mind come the moment they go into the starting gate for the Pegasus World Cup?
Really, the thing I want most is for Chrome to retire as a winner. I think he deserves that, and I'd like to see that happen. The other things are important too. Obviously, there's we can actually make a statement here. If he was able to win that race, that would push his earnings up to $21 million, I believe. And if you look at the list of the top 10 racehorses in earnings, Chrome is right now, I think he's at number 6, and he's surrounded top above him and below him are all Japanese mm-hmm. horses. And that has to do with the model that they use over in Japan. It's a similar model to ours, but they don't have all the interest in Japan. Aren't fighting at each other for a piece of the purse money. Here, everybody's all the tracks are separate. The owners are a different group. The ADWs and the wagering interest are all looking for their piece of it, and we're not working together as a league or as a group. And because of that, the horses here, what they always end up doing is stealing from the purses, mm-hmm. and so our purse structure is a lot less than what they have in Japan, it's a smaller country than ours, but the wagering, which fuels the industry, is double of what we wager in the United States. So that explains the difference in the purse structure. And for Chrome to be working under the disadvantage of racing mostly in the U.S., and still, if we could surpass all of those Japanese horses, I think that would make a statement, and maybe the statement is simply something as simple as even though everybody's written off horse racing in the United States, maybe there's a chance.
That's a good way of putting it. Well, Dumbass Partners is no more. As Perry mentioned earlier, TaylorMade bought out Coburn and struck a deal with himself to become the place where California Chrome would stand at stud. After the Pegasus, that's where he will be headed and where he will begin his stud career. We'll get Perry Martin's insights into California Chrome the sire after this message from TaylorMade.
Family owned and operated since 1976, TaylorMade has dedicated the past 3 decades to serving clients and helping make equine dreams come true. No other agency has sold more Grade 1 winners, more graded stakes winners, or more Breeders' Cup champions than TaylorMade. Visit us at the sales or online at TaylorMadeFarm.com and discover what TaylorMade can do for you.
Perry, as he begins to enter the second and very important chapter of his career as a sire, you're going to start to hear and probably have already heard some of the things that you heard when he first emerged as a racehorse, that a horse without a fashionable pedigree is unlikely, this is what the critics will say, unlikely to be a great sire, or the odds are against him. He's not by Tappet, he's not by distorted humor, that sort of thing. So your take on that, the people that say, hey, he's not that well-bred himself, I don't think he's going to be a good sire, I can assure you that you don't agree with that, but tell us why. Why would those people be wrong?
I really doubt I can get out of this without if I tell the truth, I'm going to make some people angry. But I'm going to tell the truth anyway, because that's just what I do. First of all, I've read a lot of articles, and people will use this term, Chrome's ill-bred. I think anybody that used that term in any of their articles, I'm sorry, turf writers, is ignorant. And I'm not sure ignorant people should be people who are ignorant of horse racing and breeding should be writing about it. But obviously, if you think about it, I don't know a breeder in the world who would not like to have bred California Chrome. He is a success story in I don't care how you purse it. he's what people want when they're breeding horses. So to say he's ill-bred is certainly a misnomer. unfashionable, I can live with that. I kind of like that. I'm not a slave to fashion. So I can live with unfashionable, and I can live with you have to understand that breeding horses is a business, and just like any business, it's competitive. So a lot of the opinions that you're going to hear are from people who are competing with Chrome, and if you have to be able to look beyond that and make some decisions for yourself. Obviously, Chrome comes from the AP Indy sire line, just like Tappet does. The difference would be that Tappet, they went to the well twice. And what I mean by that is Tappet or AP Indy produced Pulpit from the mating with a Mr. Prospector mare. That's a mega nick in this industry. Pulpit then was mated to a Mr. Prospector mare again and produced Tappet. I think what you're seeing with Tappet has not produced, he's been around for a long time, not that many classic winners. The classic winner, I believe he has, just appeared recently, like Tonalist, I think was the first and the only reason he was able to to win was because Chrome was injured, I think. Mm-hmm. But where I'm going with this is Tappet is a product of going to the well twice. The AP Indy Mr. Prospector mare nick or mating. And when you start to do that over and over, you start to get deficiencies that show up. Some of the things that produce fast horses, like a lighter bone structure, mm-hmm. carrying less weight around the track, cause some negative things, like fragility. A lot of what you're seeing in the industry now, people are complaining, well, horses don't race into their four-year-old, five-year-old, six-year-old year. Well, the reason for that, a lot of horses can't. They get injured, and they have to be retired. And a lot of that is because of some of these deficiencies that come around when you go to the well too often. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I really liked the Lucky Pulpit was that, yes, he came from Pulpit also, just like Tappet did, but he was a product of a Cosine mare. And so there was an outcross there, which I think now that he's produced Chrome allows us, will allow breeders to go back to the well again. This is, I talked about Lord Stanley and his breeding theories, and basically, it boils down to some very simple stuff. You inbreed to build up positive characteristics. You want that influence, the inbreeding influence, to produce positive characteristics like precociousness and speed and things like that. Stamina. Those are things you breed for. But when you go to the well too often, you start to get deficiencies, like some of this fragility that I talked about, and so you have to outcross occasionally to correct those. And I think the right mix was going to Lucky Pulpit mm-hmm. when we did with Love the Chase, and I'm going to stand by the result. But I also think that it gives us a positive going into the breeding market, simply because we've taken that, we've not continued to go to the well. We have that outcross already. Now we can go back and sort of capture that again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So people ask me, well, you're a hypocrite because before selling Love the Chase, you bred her to Tappet. Well, I don't consider myself a hypocrite. What I did was, since I knew that I was going to sell her and I wasn't going to keep the foal, I went to a fashionable stallion before selling her, simply because the market pays a premium for that fashion. Do I think it's the right? Do I think it's right that they pay a premium for that? Obviously, that's not my model.
Right.
But I wasn't going to purchase her, so I have to, as a businessman, I'm going to sell into the market, and I'm going to give the market what it wants. So that's what we're doing.
Well, so far, so good. Is, of course, not only have you had all the success with California Chrome on the racetrack, but as you mentioned, you made that incredible score selling Love That Chase for $1.95 million. Boy, that has some ring to it at the Fasic Tipton sale. And Perry, before we let you go, let's just wrap this whole thing up and put it into perspective. You were not a, prior to Chrome, you were not a fabulously wealthy man. You were not a Sheikh Mohammed or a Prince Khalid Abdullah or a John Magnier or that sort of thing. You were someone who was a completely unknown in horse racing, and you wind up with California Chrome, and I'm sure it's about a lot more than the millions of dollars he's won on the racetrack. So I want you to wrap up this very enlightening interview, and I thank you so much for your time. But just simply putting everything into perspective, what this horse has meant to you and your family and your wife, and just generally, you know, again, I'll repeat that. You know, what does he mean to you, and how special has this been? Please put that, if you can, into your own words.
From the day he was born, he's been our pride and joy. He's the first horse that we ever bred. You know, we fell in love with him when when we saw him that first day, and he's, you know, he's done so much for us. You know, I explained about my mother, and it's been very emotional. You know, we worry about him. It's a hard thing when I see my phone light up and I see it's Art Sherman. I go, no, please, please, please. I hope good news. But you know, it's an emotional roller coaster. It really is. And just the fact that we were blessed to enjoy it. I guess we are lucky.
Well, lucky, good, smart, blessed, and you've also given the fans of this game quite a thrill, especially to see a horse of such greatness actually run, and as a stallion, run as a six-year-old. Perry, I want to thank you so much for your time. I want to thank TaylorMade for making this whole thing possible with the TDN weekly podcast. Best of luck in the Pegasus World Cup, and best of luck with California Chrome as he heads off to the breeding shed. Perry, again, thanks for your time. We appreciate it so much.
All right. Thank you.